on the Davidson Sports Network. The Bob McKillop Show is on the air, powered by Ortho Carolina. The Bob McKillop Show is brought to you by Bearings, Innovative Strategies and Solutions, Pepsi, born in the Carolinas, Atrium Health, make every day the best day yet, and by Ortho Carolina, you improved. Now, here's the voice of Davidson basketball, Jared Letch, joining head coach Bob McKillop.
Welcome inside the Vance Athletic Center on the campus of Davidson College. This is the Bob McKillop Show, powered by Ortho Carolina. Alongside head coach Bob McKillop, I'm Jared Letch, as we dive into a variety of topics on our final non-conference show. And, coach, let's start with a review of Thanksgiving, the trip down to the Orlando Invitational. It was a challenge, as always, in a tournament. You get three games in 4 days. You were without three key players that were on the roster early in the year. But as we look at each of those games just in a bite-sized chunk, starting with Marquette, a 10-point setback. And the thing that stood out there, obviously, Marcus Howard, the top scorer in the country. When you're going against a player like Howard that can get hot, can score a lot of points, how do you adjust in-game, or how do you look to defend to limit his opportunities?
You know, we've had that experience several times this year already. Jazz Johnson from Nevada was a superb 20-plus point scorer. Jordan Rowland for Boston, from Northeastern, similarly. You cannot play one guy on him the entire duration of the game. You have to have a tag team kind of approach to it. And we're fortunate that we have three guards that can do that with Carter, Kellen, and John. And that's the approach that we will continue to use.
Now, looking at Fairfield, that was the victory that you picked up down there, an 11-point win. Got off to a strong start. They surged back in the second half, but I know you were extremely proud of the effort as you guys were able to sustain and pick up that win.
Well, I thought we expended so much energy in Marquette. Had led at halftime and let the game get away from us in the second half, and yet the fight was there. And when you play in back-to-back within 24 hours, when you expend energy and you get defeated, it's very difficult to regroup and come back and play with the kind of energy we did in that first half. And we certainly had it and jumped out to a big lead.
What are some of the things you do then, coming off the Marquette and the effort, all the energy that was put in? How do you get guys ready to go again? Is it more of a, I know it's a mix, I guess, of mental and physical?
It clearly is, and Justin King has been sensational as our trainer in terms of getting our guys the proper rehab after a game and getting them back, whether it's ice baths, whether it's in the pool, whether it's a stretching routine, whether it's a yoga routine. He's magnificent in the way he's done that for our guys. And then our coaches, they're very quick to respond to a game. So we have two coaches scouting, and we had one coach scouting Southern Cal if we had won, and we had another coach scouting Fairfield if we had lost. And so you have coaches expending extraordinary energy, and then all of a sudden they have to consolidate what they've done in that short period of time and somehow get that into our players' minds. And again, now you credit our players as well, who are able to absorb that and pay attention and listen and focus and then grasp that without going out onto the basketball court, but with doing it in the hotel and in a meeting room in a hotel.
Were there any hints there? I know a lot of times, I think you said post-game, that you can set up, but you never really know if the energy will be there until it happens. Is there anything you pick up on to say, okay, I think we're in a good spot?
Well, you try to show them some clips that are positive from the previous game. So the Marquette game, we showed some clips that were positive, but clips that would be very important as we moved into the Fairfield game. So the same kind of actions, the same kind of movements, the same kind of experiences that they faced, but now they're going to face them at Fairfield, and this is the way we need to handle them against Fairfield.
So you finished out that tournament against Temple. You had the lead at halftime by three, ended up losing by 13. It was something we've talked about off and on is coming out in the second half, and we saw a strong performance Saturday, which we'll get to in a moment. But what did you see that was happening that was prohibiting you guys from finishing? Was it energy, or was it a combination of different things?
I think energy is dissipated because of the three games in 4 days. I think the level of energy that we needed to compete against such physical teams as Marquette, and particularly Temple. And I also believe that sometimes you get a loss of energy on the offensive end when you're not scoring. And then when it becomes a snowball, you don't score, and then you quickly try to score. And it's sort of a theory that Pete Carril used with his offense back in the 70s and 80s and 90s, when Pete would run offense, and the opponent were so frustrated by having to defend for 25, 30 seconds that they'd come down and take a quick shot. Well, our response to missing a shot and being scored on was to take a quick shot. So we fell into that trap, and I think that allowed Temple to make the runs that they did.
Let's talk about Saturday, Northeastern. A strong win on the road. All road victories are tough for the most part. 70-63. Something we, I don't want to say we were waiting to see, but hoping to see, was a big game from John Axel in terms of output. 28 points, 7 rebounds, and 4 assists.
A big thing for John was making that first shot. You know, he made that 3, and all of a sudden he's feeling a little bit looser. And that's a big thing for all of our guys. Their confidence is fragile because of the losses we've had. And with that confidence being fragile, they need to have that back together again very quickly. We've, again, spoken about that prior to the Marquette game. We spoke about confidence after the Wake Forest loss, after the Charlotte loss. And as a result of the shattered confidence, sometimes it impacts every part of your game, and you start dwelling on what you didn't do rather than what you can do. The next play mentality was, I think, much more present at Northeastern than it had been in the previous 3 games down in Orlando. And we did struggle a little bit coming out of the gate in the second half, but we quickly regrouped and built that lead back up. And then we held on at the end, but had to make plays to hold on at the end, and we did that.
I know another area where confidence is so essential is with your bench and guys getting more reps. Bates Jones, Malcolm Winter, Nelson Bochy-Yedem, and Lee, you continuing to try to build there as they're going to see extended minutes the rest of the way.
Clearly, that's going to be a big factor. We've said that since day one, and now it becomes even more a factor because of the way the roster has evolved. But delighted, absolutely delighted with the contribution from those guys in the Northeastern game. Each one of them made plays that were critical to this outcome. Lee gets that offensive rebound on a missed foul shot. Nelson makes that drive and layup at a critical time. Malcolm Winter, first half, makes a drive, layup, and a foul shot. Bates Jones gets on the floor for that loose ball, buries a 3. So they all made critical plays as well as playing their role.
That'll take us to our first break. When we come back, we'll dive into some of the inner workings of the basketball program. This is the Bob McKillop Show, powered by Ortho Carolina. Welcome back to the Bob McKillop Show, powered by Ortho Carolina. Jared Latch, Bob McKillop, back with you. Once we get into A-10 play, we'll have additional player segments and conference-related topics. But for today, we're going to dive in more on the inner workings of the day-to-day here at the Davidson basketball program. And, Coach, looking at scouting reports and planning, how does that get divided among the assistant coaches throughout the season?
We determined that back in September, and a lot of it has to do with history. So, for instance, who had the game the previous year? And if they had the game the previous year, it gives them a leg up in terms of preparation. They remember what worked, what didn't work. And, of course, we take copious notes after each game. Every coach on the staff, or all of us, file a report on strengths, weaknesses, tidbits that could help us down the road. And that could be for a game like Auburn, which, you know, we're not sure we'll play Auburn again, but we still do that. We keep a very thick file. So it's divided up early in September. That particular coach then will search the internet and find out any newspaper articles, any website articles, any internet articles about the team, about their roster, about interviews with the coaches. Anything, any source of information is gathered. And usually there's a backup coach in the scout. So, for instance, tomorrow night, Coppin State, Matt McKillop has the scout. Brian Sullivan is the backup. So it's two guys coordinated working on the same team.
I'm sure that delegation is key for you. When do you jump back into the process, provide feedback?
I usually get the scouting report the night of our game. So, for instance, Northeastern, as we flew back from Northeastern, I'm watching the Northeastern game. But I also have been coached as to what I need to look for in the Northeastern game that could be helpful for us in the Coppin State game, what clips I should show the team that will be reflective of the kind of actions and movements that Coppin State will use offensively and defensively that could help us from the Northeastern game. And then that next morning, which was Sunday morning, I'll prepare practice based upon the scouting report, the Northeastern film, and my own glimpse of Coppin State. They will provide me with a clip tape of all of their offense, all of their defense, all of their out of bounds, and then I'll watch one full game as well.
Well, Coach, another essential part of preparing is obviously the scout team, and I want to play a quick clip from Pat Casey, and then we'll talk about it.
Sure.
That's something that coaches talked about, that all the guys on the team have to understand their role for us to be successful, and that's something that I've tried to do as a walk-on. And my role is to make these guys better and to simulate what they're going to see in the games, and a lot of that has to do with talking with the assistant coaches and kind of seeing what different tendencies that players that I'm simulating are going to have, and then generally just making sure that the guys are always locked in with the scouts, making sure they know what I'm going to be doing, because that's going to be what's going to be happening in the game. So it's just making sure that I'm making them the best players that they can be.
So it's something a lot of people don't know a lot about. You guys build internally. How does that work and function with the scout team, getting those guys ready for an accurate simulation?
Well, they do a tremendous job of sacrificing, and in many cases, they're out there just becoming defenders and trying to simulate the defense of the opponent. And it's pretty difficult to have to do that for a stretch of 7 to 9 minutes, 10 minutes, and then come back and go through another routine and then do that again for 7 to 9 minutes and then again for 7 to 9 minutes. So they're constantly being banged. They're constantly being hit. They're constantly in a defensive mode and trying to, as I said, to simulate what the opponent will do. It's a remarkable sacrifice that our scout team does, just absolutely remarkable. And they take ownership of it. And then, they're on the bench there during games, and they're as into the game as if they're going to go in on the next whistle. And it's very, very inspiring for me to know that Cal and Drew and Pat and have done such a sensational job of helping us as scout team members.
We know the impact of injuries on the roster overall and gameplay, and that's what the fans see, but that affects practice, doesn't it, as well? I know Brian Sullivan, one of your assistant coaches, he goes down with an injury. He's been in a boot for the last couple of days.
Brian is such a valuable member of the scout team because he's an experienced veteran with, very high-level Division I talent and professional talent in Europe and Australia. So he was simulating Jordan Rowland the other day, and there was a closeout that occurred, and he landed on the feet of a guy closing out. And initially the thought was he had broken his fibula. Fortunately, it was a high ankle sprain, not the break of the bone. And so he has been in a boot, and as you may recall, back in, I guess it was October, he had a concussion. So scout team players take hits. And Pat Casey's playing with a very severe bruised hip, and he's been playing through that pain all season long so far.
So let's switch over to practice planning and scripting. When you break down the practice schedule, I guess you know a certain amount of practices are going to take on a certain type of form before you start playing games. How does that work after that in terms of the fundamental takeaways, game situations? Do you script that out far in advance?
We certainly script everything out, but not too far in advance, because things dramatically change as you go from game to game, from week to week. And also who's playing well and who's not playing well, and therefore what strengths have to be maximized and what weaknesses have to be eliminated. So it's an ongoing process that is not in pencil until actually maybe an hour or so before practice starts. We spend an extraordinary amount of time meeting about practice. The coaching staff really invests itself quite a bit in preparing our team for practice. And I think that's something reflected in the way our guys improve during the year, collectively as well as individually, that they come to practice to get better. And it's not just a pickup game. It's not something that's just using time. It's actually investing time, and our guys are outstanding. And I often wonder what other schools do, because I've seen other practices, and our guys are sensational in their reception for information, for drills, for repetition, for building habits. I couldn't be more pleased with the way they do that.
So know how you break the game up in segments, and two really important ones that maybe you wait a little more is how you come out of the game and how you start the second half. Are there ways or buttons to push to help your guys in those scenarios? How do you get better at playing those two parts of the game?
You know, we use that concept of landing the plane. Captain Sullenberger in that movie, in which he just went off to his checklist, and in times of danger, times of adversity, he just went through the checklist. We try to condition our guys to have that checklist, and we repeat it, repeat it, repeat it. So we simulate, 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 as a captain in an airliner is in a simulator. Then he's in a live plane, and he's got lives at risk, lives at stake. There's a lot of adversity there when danger hits. And in no way can I compare that to what we do on a basketball court, but the same emotional concept of now it's live action. How are we going to handle this? Can we go back to our checklist, and can we land the plane? That's very critical coming out of the locker room to begin the game, very critical going into the locker room at the end of the half, very critical again coming out of the locker room, and again at the end of the game.
For you, Coach, those who have been around the program know that you take a lot of notes. You're a meticulous note-taker. Would you agree with that?
I think so, but you know, there's something about note-taking. I remember Dom Capers, who was a terrific coach for the Carolina Panthers many, many years ago. He took copious notes all the time on the sideline. And when the Panthers were winning, everyone was saying, geez, how meticulous he is and how good he is taking notes. And then they started losing, and everyone said, maybe if he stopped taking notes and started coaching, they'd win. So I do take copious notes, and I'm not during a game, but I do take copious notes. And sometimes it becomes overwhelming. After 31 years here at Davidson and 47 years in coaching, I've got notes for 47 years of coaching, and my goodness, it's a very big challenge, probably my greatest challenge, how I can consolidate what I see, what I observe, what I've been told, what our assistant coaches tell me, and consolidate that into the most practical and understandable information that could be given to the players.
Yeah, that was my question. That's going to be quite an archive. Do you go back often?
I do. I do go back often because we are such creatures of habit, and so many of the things that happen in the basketball game happen when I played in the schoolyards back in New York in the 50s and 60s. This game, there's not much that changes. The line, yes, that changes. The lane, the shot clock. But the same actions and movements occur over and over.
It's a good segue then to some of the rules changes that have happened this season. You notice in particular when we were in Florida, two flopping calls, but among other things, what are your thoughts overall on the changes that were instituted for this season?
I'm fully in agreement with the changes. You know, I think we have a great game, and I think the changes are made after much analysis and video review and conversation. I guess my biggest question is, can we make it consistent? Far too often, things are not consistently called, and that's probably the most frustrating aspect that a coach has, is when a charge is called one end and not at the other end. A palm is called one end and not at the other end. A step back walk is called at one end but not at the other end. So I think coaches are frustrated when there is a lack of consistency. Calls are missed. That's not a doubt at all. It's going to happen. It's such a fast-moving game, and I would hate to be an official. And I think the officiating is getting better and better. They're really becoming very, very serious about studying, about the supervisors are implementing a tremendous amount of education in season for them, and I think they're very attentive to it. And with the number of games on TV, they understand how they're constantly being scrutinized. It is tough. I mean, you know, I'm watching some NFL games yesterday. You saw how many questionable calls were made in NFL games, and it's a very difficult task to be an official. And I think they're just getting better and better. And I think part of it is their investment of time, and the second part is the investment that the supervisors are making to help them become better officials.
I want to hit on the schedule for a moment, because multiple Power 5 conferences, they've expanded the conference season to 20 games. So they play two conference games during November in December. That certainly impacts the availability for you guys against Power Five's non-conference. What are your thoughts on that move, and do you think it's something that the A-10 should consider down the road?
I believe it is going to be considered by the A-10. It does take two games off the table from the Power Five conferences. But when you look at our schedule this year, I think we're ranked the 40th or 41st, second, whatever it is, in the KenPom in terms of strength of schedule. And, you know, Power Five, Wake Forest is Power Five, Marquette is Power Five, Temple is close to Power Five. Auburn is Power Five. So we've had opportunities to play against some very good teams. The Colonial Athletic Association is a very good conference. Certainly Sun Belt Conference is a very, very good conference. Conference USA, a very, very good conference. A-10 is a superb conference. So we see ourselves playing at the higher echelon conferences and getting those opportunities.
Certainly no lack of big opponents. Vanderbilt would be a number one or another one down the line on December the 30th. So time for another quick break. When we return, we'll look ahead at the upcoming week as we preview the Wildcats' only home game inside Belk Arena in the month of December as the Bob McKillop Show rolls on, powered by Ortho Carolina. Welcome back to Davidson College. Jared Latch alongside Bob McKillop, head coach of the Wildcats. We appreciate you joining us here on this Monday afternoon. It's time to take a look ahead at our next opponent. And Coach, that's Coppin State. Coming up tomorrow night, be the first and only home game at Belk Arena, a stretch of 9 out of 10, either on the road or on a neutral court. What can you tell us off the bat, the 20,000-foot view of Coppin State?
Well, they're a team that's going to come in here with no fear whatsoever. They went up to Loyola in Chicago and handled them. They went down to Harrisonburg, Virginia, beat James Madison. They went to Greenville, North Carolina, and beat East Carolina. They're a team that's accustomed to playing on the road and accustomed to winning on the road this year. They have a veteran team. They're tough kids. They're going to shoot threes, and they're going to shoot them at many multiple positions. They're going to turn you over. Their defense is not a typical defense. They cut the court in half and do a remarkable play of being connected and containing space when they cut the court in half. So this is a game that we will be challenged, and I mean challenged from the tap to the end.
Pull out a couple players for us that we should be on the lookout for.
DeJuan Clayton is a left-handed point guard. It kind of reminds me of Tim Smith, the terrific point guard from 20 years ago from East Tennessee, who played for Ed Detellis at East Tennessee. He is a one-man fast break. He gets to the rim. He can pull up and shoot a three. They got the Robinson brothers, Andrew Robinson and Aaron Robinson. They had played at Quinnipiac. Now they're graduate students at Coppin State. And both of them are big, strong, athletic, and very, very skilled to be as big as they are and be able to shoot threes. They're very, very impressive. Those are the three, I think, that really stand out. Kamar McKnight's another guard, a left-handed guard that can score. He's instant offense. They got a 7'1" center by the name of Brendan Medley Bacon. They're deep, they're skilled, and they're very athletic.
What do you think will be most important? We mentioned this is the only time you get on your home court in December, but for your team, what is most important for tomorrow night?
I think we have to play our game. We cannot be rushed into taking quick shots. We cannot be forced into making quick passes. And then we have to defend as a team of connected defenders because they're going to be able to attack us with the dribble at five positions. So we better be connected and better get back on defense because they do have speeding bullets in transition. And I think the fact that they do play this very different kind of defense, cutting the court in half, is going to challenge the sometimes robotic nature of our offense and we must allow our guys to have a lot more freedom within the discipline of our offense.
After tomorrow night against Coppin State, a 12-day break for exams, when you look at that break that comes around yearly, what's the balance like of keeping the guys connected and sharp on the court while providing plenty of time for studying and academic work?
The academic challenges here are extraordinary, and of course it culminates with the exam period. High intensity focus by our players is so important during exams. Finishing papers that are due as exam week comes, So they're inundated with a lot of responsibilities, and they embrace them, and they accept them, and they fulfill them. And that's why we've had the terrific graduation rate we've had. But we do get them on a basketball court because it is important, I think, for them to get their blood flowing and get their emotions at least separated from the pressure of exams for an hour and a half a day if they can. So we'll practice one day on, one day off, one day on, one day off, that kind of schedule.
And it's hard to separate any academic from basketball here at Davidson because they go hand in hand. But if you're looking at it from a basketball standpoint, do you welcome a long break like what will happen in those 12 days, or does it depend on different factors?
I think rhythm is always such a big part of your performance, and we try to keep it as rhythmic as possible in terms of the routine, in terms of the practice, so that's indispensable. The break will give us a chance to iron out some of our problems, to maybe solidify some of the strengths we have, and maybe to eliminate some of the weaknesses we have. So it'll give us a chance to basically go back to a laboratory and come out when we play Loyola in Chicago in the 20th or so of December, so that we have done some work to make ourselves a better team. But that's the daily routine of practice. Get better every day. As long as we're taking that approach and we're working as hard as we can, I think we'll be okay.
Well, Coach, thank you for your time and insight this afternoon. Enjoyed it.
Thanks so much, Jared.
We want to remind you to join us for our next game broadcast. That's tomorrow night, Tuesday, December 10th, 6:45 on the Davidson Radio Network as the Wildcats return to Belk Arena to host Coppin State. Our next coach's show will be Monday, January 6th, as we begin our weekly schedule throughout A-10 play. We hope you'll join us for that. We'll have more info on that show coming up soon. For Bob Akillip, I'm Jared Latch. Have a great rest of your day, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Bob McKillop Show, powered by Ortho Carolina. The Bob McKillop Show has been brought to you by Bearings, Innovative Strategies and Solutions, Pepsi, born in the Carolinas, Atrium Health, make every day the best day yet, and by Ortho Carolina, you improved. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Davidson Sports Network.